Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Perhaps in order to maintain a comical delusion so well documented, their only recourse is denial. It never happened. Krugman's lucky his employer will indulge his madness because it gets clicks. And their constant drumbeat of illegitimacy created a moral imperative for Trump's removal by any means necessary. 25th Amendment, impeachment, election fraud, which is why America sees the media for what they are. What's the word? Oh, yeah. Illegitimate.
Welcome into the Annie Fry Show. And it has just occurred to me, I don't know if you heard us talking yesterday about Dawson's Creek and Gilmore Girls or whatever, but Greg Gutfeld's monologues are the Dawson's Creek vocabulary of monologues and cable news. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, they're good. He's smart. They're really smart. And I'm like, oh gosh, I gotta take notes on this. What is he saying? Oh, that's brilliant. Oh, and now I missed the next point. It's just great. He's so spot on. And I know that some of you hate him. Katie, you like Greg Gutfeld?
I do, but I know one Tony Colombo not fond of the guy.
What about you, Ryan?
I don't think he's that. I like his commentary. I don't think he's that funny.
Well, and I like him for his commentary, and I enjoy when he is funny. I don't listen to him because I want to laugh. I listen to him because I really, really like his perspective. I think it's really grounded, as opposed to some other people I feel are like just flailing in the right wing, wind or the left. You know, like you go to a Juan Williams and you go to a Jesse Waters on the Five. You know what you're going to get. I don't always know what I'm going to get from him, and I really appreciate that. But it does make me think of watching Dawson's Creek. But at least he's a grown man talking like this, and he's not 15.
Yes.
See, there's a difference, right?
It's believable.
It's believable. We're going to dip in right now to the White House press conference. It just began, and we haven't been hearing a lot from the White House. There is a ton going on, so let's get them first, and we will react immediately after. Katie, go ahead.
At other government-deemed essential businesses. Justice Gorsuch in the ruling said this as he rolled back Governor Cuomo's restrictions on places of worship. He said, quote, "It is time, past time, to make plain that while the pandemic poses many grave challenges, there is no world in which the Constitution tolerates color-coded executive edicts that reopen liquor stores and bike shops, but shutter churches, synagogues, and mosques." Behind me, you will see displayed images of Democrat hypocrisy playing on loop. These images depict the following. They show Governor Gavin Newsom of California dining both maskless and indoors at the fancy French Laundry restaurant despite severe lockdown restrictions against indoor dining for the very people he governs. You'll see Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot celebrating in the non-socially distant streets of her city. You will see Speaker Nancy Pelosi indoors at a hair salon in San Francisco when salons in California were only open for outdoor services. And you will see CNN's Chris Cuomo staging his emergence from quarantine in a made-for-television moment, coming out of the basement, and this was after Cuomo was spotted breaking his brother, Governor Cuomo's, quarantine rules to go for a bike ride in the Hamptons. Also notable is San Francisco Mayor London Breed, who followed Governor Newsom's lead in dining at the French Laundry with a group of eight people. And finally, Los Angeles County Supervisor Sheila Kuehl dining outdoors at her favorite Santa Monica restaurant after voting to ban outdoor dining at 31,000 restaurants throughout LA, calling outdoor dining a most dangerous situation. Quite clearly, these Democrats do not follow their own edicts. They act in a way that their own citizens are barred from acting. Governor Cuomo's decision to impose restrictions on the size of religious gatherings was rebuked by the highest court in the land. But what was Cuomo's response? Instead of showing deference to the Constitution, he attacked the legitimacy of the court. Governor Cuomo said this, "You have a different court," and I think that was the statement that the court was making. "We know who he appointed to the court. We know their ideology." Well, in fact, the ideology of those on the Supreme Court who made the decision to support the First Amendment are in favor of freedom, the Constitution that survives even during a pandemic. This statement from Governor Cuomo strikes at the heart of the issue. Democrats seek control. These images behind me make clear Democrats' mindset. Rules for thee, but not for me. The president stands with you, your freedom, your ability to decide how to best protect your health. We all know how to protect ourselves from COVID-19, wash your hands, socially distance, wear a mask. But as one federal court put it, there is no pandemic exception to the Constitution. And with that, I'll take questions. Welcome back, Kristen. Good to have you back.
Thank you so much. Good to see you. Thank you. Appreciate it. I want to ask you about comments that the Attorney General made to the Associated Press. He said, quote, "To date, we have not seen fraud on a scale that could have affected a different outcome in the election." Given that, why hasn't President Trump conceded?
So first, he went on to say this. It was in an AP interview where he made that initial comment. But in that same AP interview, he went on to say that he thinks a lot of people are confusing the use of the federal criminal justice system with allegations that should be made in civil lawsuits. And he discerned the fact that he said, quote, "There's a growing tendency to use the criminal justice system as sort of a default fix-all. And the campaign's litigation is all civil litigation, which is apart from something that the DOJ would be involved in."
With you on that, of more than 40 cases that have been brought by the president's legal team, the majority have been denied or dismissed. The election results have been certified in all of the battleground states. Does the president still think he has a path to win?
The president has said that he believes all legal votes should be counted and all legal votes should not be counted. And in fact, the campaign is pursuing that litigation. I can't get into the details of that litigation here, but they still do have active cases in Nevada and Wisconsin.
But how does he overturn the results when they've already been certified in these battleground states, Kayleigh?
Again, the president is just looking for every legal vote to be counted, and I will leave it to the campaign to pursue their end.
And one more, does he have faith in Attorney General Bill Barr? Does he still have confidence in Bill Barr?
The president, if he has any personnel announcements, will be the first to know it. Yeah. We'll go for Janet.
Thank you. Two questions. Has the president then spoken to Attorney General Bill Barr since this comments came out yesterday?
I'm not aware if they've spoken. I know the Attorney General was here yesterday for a pre-planned meeting with the Chief of Staff, and they discussed an array of issues, but I'm not aware if the president has spoken to him directly.
Has the president considered any preemptive pardons to any of his kids? Has he talking to Attorney Giuliani about this?
I've heard no mention of any pardons in any conversations I've had in the White House other than the pardon of Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, a three-star general who I've discussed from this podium before, who had his life ruined. He was a valiant hero who served his country both on the battlefield and then came to work in government. And what happened to him was there was an FBI note that said they wanted to get Lieutenant General Michael Flynn to lie. There then was a criminal leak of his identity and a phone call he had. He was told no lawyers were needed in the discussion the FBI was having with him. FBI investigators then after said they did not think that Lieutenant General Michael Flynn was lying, but yet he was still pursued in an unjust manner. And the government failed to provide the original FBI 302s from that interview. It was an egregious miscarriage of justice, and we're finally glad that justice was served for a war hero, Lieutenant General Michael Flynn. David.
Is the president planning to announce his 2024 candidacy in a formal event here at the White House before January 20th or even on January 20th?
I've not heard any discussions of that. I'm aware of the reporting, but the president's campaign is currently pursuing active litigation, and that is the focus, at least at the moment.
You heard his comments last night. It sounds like he's planning to run again. Do you know if that's a fact?
I haven't spoken to him about that again. His campaign is pursuing litigation. I would redirect you to the campaign. Yeah. Yes.
Mark Meadows has been meeting with Commissioner Hahn. What is being discussed? And also, did the White House get a heads up that the UK was going to be approving the Pfizer vaccine?
I'm not aware of any heads up that we were given. But what I will say about Dr. Hahn is it is par for the course for the chief of staff to meet with him as we're trying to save American lives with a vaccine in record time. In fact, two vaccines, not only a vaccine in record time. You heard Moncef Slaoui say a vaccine normally takes anywhere from 4 years to 25 years. He said that in an interview last week, and this was in 10 months. It's remarkable progress, but we still want to make sure that it comes as fast, as expeditiously, but as safely as possible, because we know by that each day that passes, there are more American lives at stake. So we want to make sure it comes out as quickly as the data allows it to. And we will have 40 million doses by the end of the year, which is a tremendous achievement, not just to have gotten a vaccine in this time, but to have produced 40 million in advance. It's having a businessman as president, the Trump vaccine. Yes, Justin.
Thanks. I had a couple of policy things, but first I just wanted to go back to what you said about personnel. Right before the election, in a rally, the president suggested that he might fire Dr. Fauci after the vote had happened. And so I was wondering if you could comment on what Dr. Fauci's status is and if you have any points.
I've heard no discussions of that. Dr. Fauci is still hard at work on the task force.
And then there were two things that the president mentioned as policy goals that would happen before the election that we haven't seen any sort of obvious progress on, so I wanted to check in on those. The first is the $200 Medicare prescription drug card that was supposed to happen before the election. It seems to have sort of vanished, so I was wondering if you could give an update on that.
Let me follow up with the chief of staff on that. I haven't heard any current discussions about it, but I will follow up with you.
He had also promised an immigration order, an executive order on immigration that would protect Dreamers. Again, he promised that before the election.
He put forth many different immigration packages on H-1B visas and others to protect American workers. I'll circle back, but there were many iterations of immigration EOs prior to the election.
Is that work progressing at this point, or have you sort of thrown in the towel?
I think right now the focus is making sure that there is stimulus relief for Americans who are hurting right now. So that is the current active policy priority that we are working on moment by moment, along with COVID. Yes. Yes.
Kaylee, as demonstrated by the large red ribbon out around the White House, yesterday was World AIDS Day. The president issued his proclamation yesterday, but consistent with his previous three proclamations, omitted any reference to LGBTQ people, even though they bear the brunt of HIV/AIDS. The president included a reference to racial and ethnic minorities, so why not LGBTQ people?
The president honored World AIDS Day yesterday in a way that no president has before, with the red ribbon there, and I think that he commemorated the day as he should have.
Why yes. There's no reference to LGBTQ people.
Charlotte.
Charlotte,
go ahead.
I wanted to ask about Section 230. Is President Trump willing to allow a government shutdown over that in the National Defense Bill?
The president has made clear the importance of 230, and I would point you to his tweet about how that pertains to the NDAA. One thing I would say, when you look at 230, just to explain for the American public exactly what that is, it's essentially a shield that is given to social media networks because they claim to be the public square. But in the case of Twitter, Twitter has become a publisher, choosing to fact check certain content. And when you're a publisher, there are certain responsibilities with that. You should not be immune from liability. And when you look at what Twitter has done on the Ayatollah Khomeini, we were just looking at his Twitter account before coming out here, and just a few weeks ago, the Ayatollah Khomeini of Iran tweeted, quote, "Why is it a crime to raise doubts about the Holocaust?" Something not worthy of a flag by Twitter, which is despicable when you think about it. Also, the Ayatollah has tweeted that Israel is a deadly, cancerous growth that should be uprooted and destroyed, something that Twitter did not deem worthy of flagging or blocking in its entirety. And in fact, Twitter executives defended that move in front of the Knesset. This is a very important issue, one that there's even bipartisan agreement that something needs to be done. So the president will be unashamed in fighting against that kind of vitriol that we see and very hateful language that Twitter is publishing. Kristen.
Thank you, Kaylee. Just one more question about Section 230. The Democratic chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, he put out a statement essentially saying that these two things are not related. Section 230 and something as big and important for our national security as the NDAA. So I just want to be clear here. Is President Trump seriously considering and talking about vetoing the NDAA over Section 230?
Yes, the president is serious about it. And I noted, when you have other world leaders that are making calls for genocide and Twitter not finding that worthy of flagging or blocking. Beyond that, you look at China, who's putting out disinformation. China tweeted out, I believe it was 6 days ago, I think it was November 25th, that COVID-19 did not originate in Wuhan, something that was not deemed worthy of flagging by Twitter. There are real grave concerns here, and the president stands by that. And it also is worth noting that the president will always defend our military, ensure that we get adequate defense funding, as he's gotten $2.9 trillion so far. But he is going to put the pressure on Congress to step up on this.
And one more question about Attorney General Bill Barr's comments. I believe you said that you're not sure if President Trump and the Attorney General have spoken since he made those comments. Was that right?
Yes, I'm not sure if they've spoken.
But can you at least tell me, was President Trump upset when he heard the Attorney General say that he has not seen or the DOJ has not uncovered evidence of widespread voter fraud enough to overturn the outcome of the election?
I haven't spoken with the president specifically about AG Barr or that comment. And I would also just point everyone to the revised or the supplemental, I should say, not revised, comment that was put out by AG Barr in the wake of media reporting that seemed to misconstrue his statement. He said this, that some media outlets have the DOJ spokesperson, some media outlets have incorrectly reported that the department has concluded its investigation of election fraud and announced an affirmative finding of no fraud, and that is not what the AP reported nor what the AG stated. I think a lot of the media didn't read beyond that one comment to the civil part versus the criminal part.
Well, I think maybe the discrepancy is, you have members of the Trump campaign coming forward and saying that there is hard evidence of widespread voter fraud enough to overturn the outcome of the election, and then you have the nation's top law enforcement officer, the Attorney General, saying if there is, he hasn't seen it.
Well, the Attorney General was speaking to what has come before his desk. And again, I'd point you to the campaign for specific questions on this. But I would just say generally they are pursuing civil litigation, which, in fact, the Attorney General explicitly said some of this is meant more for civil litigation, which is what the campaign is currently pursuing. Kevin.
Kaylee, is the president seriously considering skipping the inauguration?
I'll leave that to the president to make his announcement. He tweeted something to the effect of he knows what his decision is and he'll make his decision at the right time.
What rationale could he possibly have for skipping?
I'm not going to speculate on the president's decision. I'll leave that to him to announce it.
One follow-up. There was a report yesterday on federal officials investigating a potential bribe for pardon scheme. Has anybody at the White House been questioned by federal law enforcement officials regarding potential bribes for a pardon?
No, and in fact, a DOJ official said yesterday that no government official was or is currently a subject or target of the investigation disclosed in this filing. Yeah. Andrea. Yeah.
So thanks for my question. I wanted to ask about FBI Director Wray. Though it looks like President-elect Biden wants to keep him in the job, does that change the president's perspective on FBI Director Wray? And does he retain full confidence in him? No, I have just a quick follow-up.
Yeah, he's made no assessments, and at least in my presence, about that. And if we have any personnel announcements, we'll let you know.
Okay, great. Can I just follow up on the vaccine issue? You said 40 million doses. I recall the president saying, and perhaps even you saying that you were looking for 100 million doses by the end of the year. That 40 million is quite a bit short. So can you just clarify that number
So there are currently six vaccines that we have identified as vaccines that we were hopeful would come to fruition. And with each, with several of those, if not each of them, I can follow up with you on the exact number. We have manufacturing contracts. We have manufactured doses with several of these, but it is they have to come to completion. So with each new vaccine that comes, along with that, will come millions and millions of doses that have already been manufactured in time. But currently, of the four vaccines in phase three clinical trial, Moderna, Pfizer, AstraZeneca, and Janssen, two of those have gotten to the point of applying for an EUA. So really, it's incumbent on the manufacturer and those going through the phase three clinical trial to get that data to us, and then it's manufactured and ready to go. So the moment someone else gets to a 94% effectiveness rate or whatever the barometer is, we will have those doses.
Yes. So Kayleigh McEnany from the White House press briefing today. Haven't had a lot of these lately, a lot of questions about what the president is going to do, especially with personnel. And she took all of those pitches and said she wasn't going to get ahead of the president. So, but a lot of interesting things as well, especially that opening little monologue she had there with props. She had photos of all of these Democrats who are shutting down their cities and their states and not following their orders. We're going to talk about that when we come back, because it's probably getting under your skin like it's getting under mine. Stick around. More Annie Fry Show in just a few minutes. Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Very glad that you spent some of your Wednesday afternoon with us. If you're out and about right now grabbing some lunch, I want to remind you that you can take us back to your desk or your kitchen or wherever you are going to be headed back to and listen to us on radio.com. You can also watch the show on the Annie Fry YouTube page and the Annie Fry Show Facebook page. I'm about to post a picture of my Christmas tree, which is up in the stand, but Yay. Not decorated. It is not decorated. We have taken a step in the direction
Yes.
of holiday cheer, but it didn't get done. And I'll be able to explain a lot more of this later, but it has been quite a process. So I'm going to share the progress. And I feel like if I share the progress with you, I will bully myself into having to finish it hopefully tonight. And I told my kids, we have these hot chocolate bombs from Seams for the Soul Boutique. And I said, what we're going to do is we're going to get the Christmas tree up and we're all going to have hot chocolate around the Christmas tree and we'll do a Facebook Live with it. And they're like, oh, yay. And so they thought that's what we were going to do last night, because I told them that's what we were going to do last night. And then it didn't happen. So it's got to happen tonight. So you're going to want to make sure that you subscribe to the Annie Fry Show YouTube page, because that's where we will do that live. You saw at the beginning, or you listened to at the beginning, at least, of Kayleigh McEnany's press conference right there. And you see the person after person after person who has been putting out these edicts of shutting down and limiting and locking down people's livelihoods, and like immediately going against their own declaration. You have to ask yourself, do they believe what they're saying? You know, if you really think of it, the hypocrisy of it, the idea that they would tell you to behave a certain way and then exempt themselves from having to behave that way. There are two concerns that I have with that. One is that they're not doing as they say. But the second thing is, which is worse to me, if you should do it and it's for your own good and science and all that stuff, do they not believe their own science? Do they believe they're actually exempt from the science that is going to affect you? That would be a scientific breakthrough. Maybe we should spread some of that around. They're all Democrats. And of course they're all Democrats, because the Democrats are the only ones that are locking folks down. But when you see governor and mayor and county executive and supervisor after supervisor after supervisor saying, this is what you're going to do, and I understand this is going to be hard, but it is for your own good. It's what you tell a child when they don't understand how to make good decisions for themselves. That's what they're doing to you, but they're not following their own advice. So my question is, do they not actually believe what they're saying? Do they not actually buy into what they're saying? And if that's the case, what the hell are we doing here? Why is any one single person's job being affected by these rulings that are being made by these rulers for us to follow, but for them to not? I'll tell you what, J.B. Pritzker keeps telling people to follow the law. You might want to go through some legislators if you want to call it a law. And you might want to tell them to come back to Springfield to get something done. But no, you haven't done that because COVID, of course, you've shut that down too. It's not a law. It has to be made by lawmakers in order to be a law. I mean, Ryan, do you believe these folks just, do you think that they just think they're exempt from it? Or do you actually think that they're like, well, I can be careful enough. And they think that it's maybe not as bad as they're implying to the rest of us, morons, that it is as bad as they say it is.
I think they just think that highly of themselves, that they think that they really are above everything, include, like, there's the masses and then there's me, and I can do whatever I want. The problem to me is that where are... If a conservative politician came out, we voted for them, and they were pro-life, and we found out that they were having a fling on the side and they forced somebody to have an abortion, we would demand that there be justice for that person. In fact, we've probably had situations like that, that those people do not last. Where are Democrats right now calling out the hypocrisy in these leaders? Because we can call it out all day. Yeah,
they're in Texas. They're in Austin, Texas right now is where they are. But I mean, like, even if they think that they're not, even if they think they're not, if they think they're better than that, scientifically speaking, they still have to assume that what they're saying is in the realm of possibility. If coronavirus is as bad as they're saying it is, I mean, you'd have to think that they are. I mean, it doesn't make sense to me. Katie, what do you think?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that this all has to do with money and power. I mean, you mentioned yesterday Cardi B had to send out an apology saying, oh, I had
what's 30... a Cardi B?
She is a rapper.
It's a form of thing.
She had to send out that apology saying, I had 35, 36 people over at my house for Thanksgiving. I'm sorry, guys. Like, please don't judge me or whatever the hell it was.
Don't be sorry. Either do it in the face of what's going on or don't.
Yes. Like, she didn't know. Like, oh, I hadn't heard about the Thanksgiving thing. But there's a virus?
I think that that's it. You guys nailed it. These people don't think that they're going to get caught because money and power usually has their back.
So you just said these people don't think that they're going to get caught. That's different than what I thought you were going to say, is these people don't think that they're going to get sick and die.
No, it's caught.
And so, okay, so maybe that's where we land on this, because you've got businesses right now, and I'm hearing, especially in the last 24 hours, the three of us have heard some very interesting stories about people in the bi-state region who are like, nah, screw this, we're good. We're gonna keep on keeping on. And I love these stories, and I'm not gonna talk about them on the air because I don't want to draw attention to them in a way that negatively affects them. But are we worried about getting sick and spreading a global pandemic that's going to kill our grandmas and grandpas? Or are we worried about getting caught? Because those are two really, really big differences. Don't you think?
I think that they look at them and say, well, statistically, I'm doing this for the good of everyone, but just little me, I'm not going to be affected by it.
Yep. But you're still at a restaurant that somebody still has open with other people in it. You're sitting next to people without masks on. You aren't different than we are. This virus is non-discriminatory. I remember at the very beginning of all of this, when we didn't really know anything, and it started to get really scary, was talking within my family. What's, because I remember 9/11 very, very well. I was a senior in high school when it happened. That was terrifying because there was somebody out there, you felt like you were being hunted for who you are, for what you were or what you continue to be. That was terrifying. What's scarier? That, where you feel like, you know, I could find that person and I could eradicate that person and I could neutralize that threat, or a virus that is out there that is looking for the next closest thing to attack. And at that time we thought destroy. We didn't know, I remember looking at my kids going, what am I going to have to experience as a mother here? Like, you guys are staying in here and I'm going to follow you around with bleach. Like, that, I didn't know what to think. What's scarier, a non-discriminatory virus or friggin' Osama bin Laden? And I didn't have the answer to that. These people are ruling their constituents, which you don't get to do in America. They're ruling their constituents as if the pandemic is non-discriminatory and is coming for you. It's just not coming for them. And Americans don't like that crap. And you can see it all across the country. people are starting to say, yeah, I'm not so sure about this. I'm going to fly my American flag and I'm going to go make some money for myself. Peace. Peace. Let's talk about it more throughout the rest of the show. When we come back, Chris Farrell with Judicial Watch is going to join us. Judicial Watch, they do these FOIA requests and they get stuff and then they tell the world about it. Records show that the Obama DHS scanned the Georgia election sites in 2016. What does that mean for what we're dealing with right now? Judicial Watch, Director of Investigations, Chris Farrell, when we come back. No, go away.
We are going to present evidence of real voter fraud. Thousands and thousands of instances in voter fraud in Nevada alone by 5 o'clock today that will be submitted to the court. And we have instances, for instance, of 40,000 plus people who have voted twice in the election. That's real voter fraud. We have data showing that people who were on the record as having voted by mail didn't even receive ballots and say that they didn't vote.
So that's Trump attorney Jesse Banal on a Nevada lawsuit. And people keep saying there's no proof, there's no evidence. Actually, I take that back. Some people aren't saying anything about it at all. They're pretending as if it's not even there. Judicial Watch, they are some folks who are always working. Judicial Watch is always looking in corners that other people would just rather you not brush the dust off those papers. They send out FOIAs like it's their job, because it is, and they get stuff from it, and it's always fun to find out what treats that they have for the American people, because what they do is they present documents and they present truth, and it is very hard to find folks doing that in this day and age. That's why we welcome onto the show Chris Farrell, the Judicial Watch Director of Investigations today, to talk to us about some records that they found that show that the Obama DHS scanned Georgia election sites in 2016. Chris, a pleasure to have you on the show. What can you tell us?
Great to be back with you. Thanks.
Thank you.
This is actually an old story, but it's made relevant and newsworthy because, surprise, surprise, as you just mentioned, we actually got records and documents detailing what happened. And this is a case going back to 2016 when Homeland Security, a cybersecurity element within Homeland Security, was out scanning various state election sites, and they went in and attempted, it looks like, some sort of an intrusion or a scraping of the of Georgia's Secretary of State voting section, and it was detected. Georgia reacted and sort of said, hey, what are you guys doing? Get out of our website. Anyway, all this is documented, about 240 pages of material, and it's a back and forth as to what they were doing and what they were, how they were detected, et cetera.
Chris, why? What are they scanning for? What are they looking for? What can they do, and why is it illegal?
Yeah, well, you know, it isn't necessarily illegal. You know, there's a lot of people waving their arms and screaming about, you know, cybersecurity and the need for our elections to have proper internet and cybersecurity, you know, electronic systems security. And that was the guise under which Homeland Security was conducting their activities. Homeland Security Inspector General did a report and said that, you know, they had looked at the Georgia site, but they only were looking at the public side of their website, that they did not conduct a penetration or an intrusion operation. But, you know, this set everybody on edge and said, what are you doing and why are you trying to get into our election site? And they didn't just do it in Georgia. There were other states that had scans or evaluations done by the federal agency Homeland Security. Some detected it, and frankly, some didn't. So it's very interesting to see that years ago, you know, Homeland Security was doing this kind of activity, and of course, it makes people wonder, well, if they can get in, you know, what were they doing? Can somebody else get in? Maybe they embedded something. I mean, it just raises a ton of questions.
So when it raises these questions, what does Judicial Watch do next with this information? Where do you go to question the people who might have those answers? And you got to go to court. I'm sure people aren't just lining up to give you all the information that you want.
Yeah.
What is the next process with this type of revelation, especially in the context of what we're dealing with right now?
So job number one is what we're doing right now, and that is we are educating the public. We are making it known. We get all the records and documents. We put them on our website. We make them available to everybody. We do media presentations as we are now, whether it's television, radio, you know, internet, whatever. We get the information out there so that we have an informed, educated electorate so that they understand, hey, this has been going on for years. I've been at Judicial Watch going on 22 years now, and I can tell you back in 2000, yours truly, along with my colleague, were the ones who got access to the ballots in Florida. So the hanging chads and the dimpled ballots and people examining that, that was also us. That was Judicial Watch. We started that entire thing. The rest of the world came running in behind us and turned it into the big media sensation everyone remembers. But that was another case where we used public records to get access to ballots. And so the public has got to have confidence that these elections are for real and that they're not rigged and they're not being gamed or, you know, twisted around in some way. And the only way we're going to get there is by asking tough questions.
Chris Farrell is on the phone with us, Judicial Watch Director of Investigations. Chris, this revelation, or at least to us, I know you said it's not brand new, that the Obama Department of Homeland Security was scanning the election systems of Georgia and some other states. What does that mean for right now? And I know we have to deal in facts here, not theory, but what does it mean for 2020?
Well, it opens the door to the question of, you know, the reliability and the security of these systems. Obviously, there's a ton of people out there that know all about Dominion as one of the voting systems, and there's questions about the security of that system and how it could be manipulated in some way or how people could gain access to it or change votes. And, you know, at some point, one would hope that the American public would take its voting seriously and that they would demand a legitimate, valid, you know, authentic means by which every state conducts its elections. Not doing a one-size-fits-all, not demanding that, you know, Iowa behave the same way as New York does, but that we have some sense that our elections are accurate, fair, complete, and that the tallies we get are legit and can't be messed around with in some way. And so maybe if we raise the temperature, maybe if we get people to pay attention, maybe, you know, 2024, we'll get this right. And we won't have the contested situation we have now and people running into court and asking, you know, government lawyers in black robes, those are judges, right? Yeah. Well, they end up asking government lawyers in black robes for permission to win an election. That is craziness, right? We need to have legit elections that stand on their own and that we have faith and confidence in, and not, you know, running to mommy and daddy to please save us if we don't like an election outcome, regardless of who you support, Democrat, Republican, whatever.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. Chris, real quick before we go, only got a minute left here. You said we need to get this fixed by 2024, specifically in Georgia. What about January 5th of 2021 when we have these two Senate races? I mean, gosh, yeah. if Trump, you know, for someone like myself, who is a Trump supporter, a Republican voter, a conservative, if Mitch McConnell gets to retain his majority in the Senate, I will sleep a lot easier in a Biden administration than I will if those two races go to the Democrats. Are we confident in Georgia's ability to maintain propriety in January?
I'm not. I mean, look, and you know, your worst case scenario, I'm speaking for myself, my own personal opinion, my own personal beliefs here. If the Senate swings over to the Dems and he's got a full house, he's got the House, the Senate, and the Executive Mansion, you want to see, you know, add another S to USA. It's going to be socialist states of America. It'll be crazy what's done. So yeah. I'm surprised, frankly, that there isn't a little more activity and energy and activity and campaigning and motivation about, you know, this entire voting question. I think a lot of people are sitting on their hands and kind of shrugging or saying, oh, well, you know, if people have a real interest in what the outcomes are and what the future of the country is, I sure don't see a lot of energy. And that's really disturbing to me.
It is frightening. Chris Farrell, Judicial Watch, thank you so much. Always a pleasure to speak with you.
Thanks.
We'll talk to you again soon. I'm grateful for Judicial Watch being out there doing the detailed minutia that gets us real factual information. We're going to take a quick break right now. And when we come back, DeRoy Murdoch's going to join us. And he's going to talk to us about the Obamas. Buckle up, folks. DeRoy, when we come back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.